This is a podcast from RTE Radio.
Hello and welcome to Audioscope. I'm Joe Wallard, and with me in studio today are Des Kenny, CEO of the National Council for the Blind of Ireland. On January the 30th last, NCBI launched its strategic plan for the next 5 years. The plan, entitled Putting People First, was launched by Minister for Health and Children, Mary Harney, TD. In his foreword to the document, chairperson of NCBI, Henry Tierney, mentions the fact that NCBI last year celebrated its 75th anniversary of the foundation. And then he goes on to say, and I quote, "The climate in which we are now working is clearly very different from that which existed when the founding members set out to establish the services with an emphasis to people who are blind. Consequently, it is timely to reassess the direction of the organisation and increase a framework to take into the future." Close quotes. Des, this is a very ambitious document. It contains 6 strategic goals, but if I may say so, some of them are already in operation and have been for some years. Let's take the first goal, right? Service delivery goal. To deliver quality nationwide services which are relevant. But these are already relevant. These have been in existence for some years, Des, have they not?
Oh, and they probably will be in existence long after the 5 years of this plan, Joe. The tests there are relevant, and to continue to look at the services and see that things will remain relevant. It'd be pointless us dealing with old tape recorders, Joe, when we're moving into the digital age of CDs. So that means that our agency, and just a very simple example of how things change around you, that we then have to equip our libraries to move and deal with the reality of cassette recorders no longer being available and tape no longer being available as a medium of communication. So, of course, things change, but equally what you try to do with a strategic plan is to make sure that the systems in the organisation keep up with the things that are changing around it.
The second goal of the 6 is one that I find very interesting. It's entitled Collaboration Goal. To provide services in partnership with those who use them and, where appropriate, to collaborate with other organisations in promoting the well-being, social and cultural inclusion of economic independence for people who are blind or visually impaired. Now, historically, Des, I think you might agree that there has never been too much collaboration between organisations of and for the blind. Are you saying that NCBI now aims to change that situation? I'm thinking particularly in terms of the minefield of fundraising. Will there be changes made there?
There's never been enough, Joe. There will never be enough collaboration. There's always been friendly conversations and at times mild collaboration. What this really sets out to do is to look at some of the services that we provide and that others provide, and ultimately, for it to be clear, rather than continuously walking on eggshells and around the subject, to see who are the most appropriate providers of services. Well, NCBI might like to have a view on things. That doesn't mean that NCBI should all the time do those things. Also, that NCBI might have a view in terms of the built environment and how that environment should be shaped up, and that we should make representations. May not mean that we're the only people who would have that view. And that if guide dogs wish to have a view on it, we should work and collaborate and ensure that when we're trying to advance the needs of, if you like, the collective family of blind services, that we all speak from the same hymn sheet, that we're not going in with different messages and then can be divided. Same equally when it comes to promoting awareness around prevention of eye disease or encouraging better use of vision and equipment. Again, there are a lot of organisations, the 4 organisations, NCBI, Guide Dogs, possibly St Joseph's and Fighting Blindness. We will all have a common call to good practice in those areas. So what we've got to do is to set up a mechanism whereby the goodwill that exists is now harnessed and some engine is put into it to make sure that we just go past the conversation, polite conversations, into actual working relationships. So that's what's intended by that. And the end result of that is that everybody is happier and better, because our organisations collectively, once we're seen to be a unified force, we can then go and represent the needs of our constituency as a unified force, because if we're not unified and united in presentation, people will say, well, get your own house in order first before you come looking for government and the reforms of support.
But with regard to services, again, do you ever see the time when, for instance, NCBI might be training guide dogs, or guide dogs might be teaching people who attend their training courses, be teaching them Braille? As it is, both organisations do mobility training. Do you see it going that far?
Well, you never know. This and the introduction you quote from Henry Tierney, it anticipated the changed environment in which total blindness is no longer the mean that runs the organisation. Blindness is a significant cause of the more costly element of the service delivery. But we deal with people who have significant low vision, and low vision is a significant has a significant call on the service delivery. In terms of where that leads us into the future, there could come a future when the guide dog of the future, 10 years, 15 years from now, is a robot. And NCBI is proficient in technology. So who provides the robot dog? Is it NCBI or is it guide dogs?
It's an interesting one.
But they are the things that shouldn't become an issue.
Why, or is that just a subject for another day's programme?
I think it's a subject for another day's programme. I think what we've got to do is to sit down and make sure that what gets done is an added value of each of us doing more things for the same people rather than doing the same thing in a fragmented way, so that the fragmented thing can lead to us all running around like headless chickens providing similar services, and we don't increase the overall value of what people get.
The third goal concerns research relating to vision loss. Now, apparently NCBI support and or conduct research relating to vision loss. We're all aware of the wonderful work done by the Low Vision Clinic at NCBI. Do you see that being extended, the work? And could you elaborate a bit more on research?
Well, I think research has to be to capture in the course of our work what people are telling us are their needs and our perception of the things that make life difficult for people. So that's if you like, action research in the course of doing what we do as NCBI. We should be collecting more of that and framing that into profiles of how life is difficult living with total blindness or with significant sight loss. So we should be using that and shaping our arguments and cases out of that. Then I think you will also get to a point where you will look at medical research to improve the extent to which the interventions can reduce glaucoma, the onset of diabetic retinopathy, ensure that screening of diabetes is made an easy process through the use of cameras and computers. And generally, I suppose we're looking at keeping down the population of sight loss people, for want of a better school, who will be coming to us.
This is where we just refer back to something we mentioned earlier about working with organisations. Would you see yourself working with Fighting Blindness?
Very much so, and I think that has to be the case, that we are would have to work significantly with Fighting Blindness, and we've already started in a relationship build with them around last year's World Sight Day.
Come now to goal number four, accessibility goal, to work towards a barrier-free environment to provide expertise, education and assistance in making buildings, services, technology and information to people who are blind or vision impaired. Des, again, if I may ask you, are you not doing that already? Is this not just a continuation of something you're already doing with regard to technology and the environment and barrier-free?
If you like, 15 years ago, we weren't even dealing in computers, Joe. 5 years from now, we have to be positioned to deal with computers and the whole technology that computers create somewhat differently. Because at every point of the contact a person has now with society, the computer is playing an even an enriched or enhanced, increasing part of the contact point. And unless we can work with people who provide services like websites, telephony services, even down to our famous audio crossings, Joe, that unless we work with people who make that technology available for the seeing public, it could be unavailable for us, or it could be a barrier to our free passage and movement in society. So yes, a lot of these things we're doing, the goal, I think, is not just a goal, Jim. Joe, each goal has a key activity and supporting actions. So if you were to take the accessibility goal, it says what we should be doing there, and it will list about 17 activities that will support that. And one of them is really to say that if technology is that important, and if technology is going to be the lubricant in society in the future, the new fabric through which communications happens, we're saying that people who are blind and vision impaired should have access to that technology at our end, that should be made available free of charge in the same way as spectacles are, because it's our spectacles into that seeing world.
Well, I'm sure you'll agree with me. It's fraught with difficulties, that one. And it's rather connected to the next one, if I may go on. The fifth goal is entitled Advocacy Goal. Now, this is to pursue the elimination of discrimination based on vision loss by influencing public policy and increasing public awareness. Des, how do you propose to do that? Because that is really difficult.
Yeah, but again, it's part of the same continuum of saying that blind people have abilities and that those abilities have to be recognised, and that the
I know you're saying that, but again, how do you propose to do it? Do you propose to come up with television ads that, you know, to let people know that blind people can do certain jobs? Do you propose to visit factories and places of employment to talk to employers of what blind people can do? Or am I barking up the wrong tree here?
No, I think it's a mix of all of the things that you describe and the things that we have been doing in the past and the things that will get joined to them. Each strategic goal there is the hub around which things will radiate. Each year we have to prepare a business plan to give life to the activities and actions that will see us move forward from our baseline of today. In 2008, we will do another review of where we've got to know, have we moved forward in 2007? And the same in 2009. Each year, we'll do a health check, as it were, on how far we've got with those goals. Now, so in some ways, while they are, if you like, our guiding principles, and they are, in a way, an expectation that an agency like ours would have pushed upon us and would have taken on ourselves, sometimes we may only be marginally delivering on them, and we may not have a full programme around it. What we're saying is that we have now to take the principles of commitment and sort of give life and energy to those into policies and plans, and we then have to be in some way able to show at the end of each year, at the end of each activity timeline, that we have moved things forward.
The sixth goal, surely, Des, is something that should be in existence already. I read it. Professionalism goal, to foster the highest level of staff performance in a progressive workplace where continuous learning and professional development. Now, surely it's incumbent on any organisation to make sure that the highest level of professionalism is achieved by members of the staff. Or am I again barking up the wrong tree? Surely you've been doing that for the past 75 years.
But Joe, we haven't had the same staff with us for 75 years. An organisation changes in terms of the people who work in it and in terms of the offices it
has. Take your point.
The decentralisation of the offices and whatever.
Yeah, I take your point, Des. But again, when somebody applies for a job or somebody's getting a job, whatever the job is, whether it's a cook or it's a resource worker or whatever it is, you have to make sure that when they're applying for that job, when they're being interviewed for the job, that they are suitable for the job, whether that's 75 years ago or today.
But Joe, 75 years ago, or if you like 20 years ago, we could obtain people who were trained in mobility and technical skills for blind people. Nowadays, that's not possible because there is no training within the country, essentially, that does that at an academic or a college level. So we have to provide that level of training ourselves. So we have to look to see to what extent we do that. Also, if older people are, as it would seem to be a significant part of the way we go forward, some understanding of gerontology or the needs of older people are going to form part of that. So we do need to enrich, again, the workforce with people either skilled in that or give people more skills in that area. You know, it's not that long ago. 10 years ago, we would have dealt substantially with NCBI as a blindness agency. And in the recent 10 years, we would have moved the organisation forward to the use of low vision as a need with people who have some usable vision, and increased the use of the of that through the low vision services, which now see 2,500 people a year. So that is a new service. We don't have staff trained to do that, so we hire staff in, and yet we also have staff now who support the general technology looked at through those services. So we do move it on. We do make sure that people have it. But we do have to write these things down so that it's not up in my head, or it's not in your memory from a broadcast of 4 years ago, what NCBI does. People now want to know, and we have an accountability expected of us by our funders to say what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, when do we intend to deliver it, who's going to check on it. And above all, we must ensure that what we are providing continues to be relevant to the people who use it. Because if they don't need it, we shouldn't be providing it.
Something that exists today that didn't exist 75 years ago, in as much as it does today, that's the increasing ageing population. How do you propose to deal with that? How does NCBI propose to deal with that?
Well, I think what you're looking at there is that is the significant thing. As people live longer, their state of health will inevitably break down in the context of vision, as we know it at the minute. That there are no major cures around macular degeneration or the old age diseases. So by the time a person lives to 90, which is not that rare an event nowadays, a lot of them will have significant sight loss. And what we want to do is to ensure that people can live quality lives with that level of sight loss. They won't require the braille services. They may require the talking book services, the audio services in a different way. But currently what we have is we nearly have a one-service-fits-all service. And what we need to be able to do is to ensure that the richness of service we give to a young person represents their particular urgencies around young people's needs to academically qualify, obtain work up to the age of 18 or even beyond into college. And then for people who are older, who are coming out of the work stream, that their contribution to society is recognised in that there is a safety net and a service there that ensures that they do have a quality of life, that they can do things as low vision people, that they will have their books to read, their newspapers to listen to, and that the general movement around the environment is made a whole lot easier. So I think NCBI has a remit in this strategic plan to work in two ways. Work directly with people to make their lives that much easier and more comfortable with sight loss, and then to work with the environment, with others who influence negatively or positively the environment in which we live, to make sure that that environment where we move about and interact is also accommodating of blindness and low vision.
A programme for the blind such as Audioscope has been on air for quite a number of years. It started years ago as Listen and See and moved on. And here's something that I don't think we envisaged talking about when the programme went on air those many years ago. A rise in immigration. How do you propose dealing with that? And can you explain that a little more to me? How do you intend to deal with it?
Well, I think part of the increase of Ireland's population is coming from people who are coming from Eastern European and other countries. We have probably, I think it's now reckoned, in excess of people from 110 different nationalities. So what we do need to do is to cater to their particular site requirements and to have our literature and information available to them. We have in recent times had to deal with people who are here on a refugee status or people who might have lost their sight as a result of wars in Africa or other parts of Eastern Europe. And they will have needed in the past special understanding, and we will have had to make special interventions on their behalf. We also, as I say, need to look at the extent to which rubella, which was a condition which was taken out through immunisation substantially in Ireland, could come back in again as people coming from other less developed medical cultures will start to bring those things back with us. So we're dealing with essentially people who will have taken less care of their eyes, and in fact you will probably find that people will be coming here who will be working at a level of industry with reduced vision where they may not be regarded as safe, and they'll be looking for our support and intervention. It's just something, again, we have to gear ourselves for. in terms of how we provide services, how we communicate, and also on the final part of that, Joe, is that the people from who are coming in where English isn't their mother tongue, these are the people in many ways who are providing services over the counter to vision impaired people. So we must ensure that we reach out our awareness and inclusion programs to talk to them in a way that introduces them to why people use guide dogs, that they are allowed, they may not be allowed in their cultures. We have to explain it, and we have then to show them in the same way a re-education of them as a service population, that our needs as vision impaired people are important, and we have to do that possibly in their language.
I see it's NCBI dealing with putting people first, dealing with sight loss. It's no longer a National Council for the Blind of Ireland. Is there a problem with the word blind here?
There is no problem with blind relative to the overall title in the organisation. What we've found over the years is that the word blind is a title that doesn't properly reflect the change of the user base in the organisation. 82% of the people who use our services have some residual usable vision, and 18% have, if you like, something are approaching total sight loss or blind, and they will continue to incur the highest significant cost in the service by way of libraries, technology and whatever. This is the totally blind. But telling people that they are going to the National Council of the Blind when, in fact, their sight is reduced is a very daunting thing. And what we discovered in our survey some years ago is that it was taking people anything from 7 to 12 years before they came to the organisation after being told by their ophthalmologist that the ophthalmologist could do nothing for them. So it operated as a barrier to people coming to us.
Is that true? Did they have a problem with, you know, if their doctor suggested to them that they contacted the National Council for the Blind, they were reluctant to do it because of the word blind. I'm not blind, I can see.
Well, they felt that their doctor wasn't telling them the whole story. I think there's always a fear that anybody who has some usable vision, I think, lives daily with the fear that that vision will somehow quickly disappear, that they'll wake up one morning and it will be gone. It's very hard from the stance of somebody who's totally blind, who's gone through services and the confidence of living with sight loss and been in no way daunted by that, to understand the foibles that people will have. Even a person who will have lost one eye and still have one very good usable eye will live with a certain phobia that if anything happens, that eye could lead them into the world of blindness.
Finally, there's fundraising. This is, as I said at the beginning, a very good plan. It's a very forward-looking plan, but it's all going to cost a lot of money. Where do those funds come from?
Well, everything, of course, is contingent on the availability of money. But money is available in two ways, because the plan talks about looking at doing what we're doing to make sure it continues to be relevant, that we continue to do it. And implicit in that and stated in the strategy is that if we shouldn't be doing it, we shouldn't be doing it. Somebody else maybe should be doing it. And if we're looking possibly at the need, an example of residential care, probably NCBI wouldn't provide residential care for older people. Maybe we should form alliances with the agencies who are providing residential care, either for people with disabilities or people in old age. So we'd be looking to make sure that our needs can be represented through some of the provisions that other people have. So if we don't do what, in fact, is less relevant, we should have some money there. If we, in fact, look to see bravely, are there some services that somebody else should run? Well, maybe they should run them, and maybe we should reallocate some of the funding there accordingly. But the bulk of the change and innovation and advance of the organisation will have to come through new funding, because we need people in order to deliver those services. And that will entail us making our case to the HSE, the Department of Health and Children, and then to increase our fundraising. What we're trying to do at the minute is to improve our own fundraising through a greater unification of NCBI's fundraising in terms of events and the use of the Mrs. Quinn shops, where we have 63 of these outlets throughout the country, and building our overall capacity of fundraising significantly over the years. Not aggressively, but doing things differently and to deal in a more holistic way with the organisation's needs across fundraising.
And do you see those funds coming in? Do you see for instance, you mentioned there Mrs Quinn's shops, the 63 shops, they have really increased in the last number of years. That's been a tremendous source of income from NCBI, or has it?
Yeah, well, they've contributed. They are contributing, say, this year, possibly €600,000 net to the organisation. But all of the dreams and these plans that are here in our strategic plan will work as money becomes available. The reality is that you could hit a recession, or that we couldn't compete as aggressively for funds from HSE as some other organisations. And you could be faced, and one doesn't usually launch a plan like this, but it is there as a caveat that if we don't get the funding, we just have to consolidate and retrench services if that is to be the case.
Des Kenny, can I thank you for talking to me today on Audioscope? Joe Bullard saying that, listen, you can get a podcast, you can download a podcast of this whole programme from the RTE website. Just like to say good luck to you all. Take care and travel safely. Bye.